Elizabeth Esty, I know you have been working assiduously on the question of train safety. And we know we can have either of two things happening now. We can have two people in the cab, so that one falls asleep, the other one is awake, or we can have this fabulous machine which says, uh-oh, something's wrong here, stop or slow down. It isn't happening. How come?
Well, what's been going on, and as we know, sadly, all too well, in the tri-state region, is that there have been a bunch of accidents recently.
Yeah.
Derailments, actually loss of life. That's deeply concerning, and safety has absolutely got to be at the top of the list. But so is reliability, and so is getting people to work and homes, on time matters too. And for the last several years, I've been on the rail subcommittee of the Transportation Committee, and we've been pushing as hard as we can to try to get the best technology in place to help achieve those goals of safety and increased efficiency, getting people there, getting the trains to run faster and more efficiently. So we've been pushing to fully implement what's called positive train control. And positive train control is a technology in which the trains basically are monitored continuously for speed and the track, sort of the track conditions and locations, and would automatically throw brakes on if they're over speed or, say, coming into a turn too fast. So it's a way that we should be using technology. Now, there have been some glitches, and there's been some foot dragging, both, going on. But we're actually now pretty close to getting it implemented fully, but not there yet. And there, the Obama administration had pushed to put in place what's called the two-man rule to make sure that you've got a backup. So say you have, for whatever reason, say somebody gets ill, say somebody gets distracted, or they're dealing with something else to deal with the train, you've got another person on the car who can pay attention to the condition of the track, see that there's a car stranded on the rails ahead, for example, use an example like that. Now, pretty much immediately upon taking office, that's now been rolled back. So that two-man rule, it's been rolled back. So it's not going to be implemented.
So I think
it's a mistake because we don't have a positive train control in place yet, and we don't have it in place everywhere. And I think the more prudent answer would be, let's get it in place everywhere, see the impact it's having, make sure that it actually is working to save lives the way we hope it does on paper. Let's make sure it does in reality. And that would be, I think, the smarter, better course of action. But the new administration took a different position.
Let's take a look at our proposed tax policy in the United States. Who makes out, who doesn't?
Well, there's a lot of uncertainty about what this. We don't know a whole lot about what the president's tax proposal is. And in fact, we were just discussing in my office, like, what kind of communications, which I'm getting a lot these days, very little on the tax policy. And I think, frankly, that's because it's, all of one page long. People can't really figure out what's in it. It is exceedingly thin right now, very little detail. So the bottom line that we're seeing, though, is a push for simplification, which I think there's great support for. I can tell you, I'm highly supportive of more simplification. We don't want gaming around. We want it to be easy to file your taxes and shouldn't require a PhD in economics or tax law to file your taxes. I think we'd all agree that would be a good thing. But, fairness matters too, and what those policies are matter too. And there's a big effort underway to really keep reducing rates to a very low level, and which would require cutting of a tremendous number of important programs in order to both increase defense spending by a lot and dramatically drop tax rates, which is why you're seeing so many longtime folks who have been involved in Republican administrations rejecting this proposal. Because they say, it was one thing under Eisenhower to reduce tax rates when tax rates, marginal rates, were at 90%. Yeah, that did discourage people, no question about it.
Yeah.
And it's even true during the Reagan administration. The reduce them. But we have much, much lower tax rates now. So the benefit you're going to get now versus, you know, really cutting to the bone, essential services. We are not repairing our bridges. We are not building, you know, new highways. We've got airports that look like third world countries right now. And that has happened because we have stopped doing maintenance. And you've got to actually invest and maintain in basic services. And that includes education, which is foundational for economic growth. But I would say transportation and infrastructure and infrastructure, which is to say internet and energy systems. Those are absolutely essential, and we're not doing that right now. So it's not the right time to do a big, huge tax cut when we're still not investing to get caught up with infrastructure and making wise choices around education as well. So I would say there are smarter, better plans out there that can accomplish tax simplification and rationality around how we deal with overseas tax profits. But this proposal, I think, doesn't make sense and, frankly, doesn't serve the American people.
I wanted to ask you, I only have 3 minutes left, Elizabeth Esty, and so I want to ask you a question real quickly about the deduction of state and local taxes, which is a lot of people depend on. I mean, we pay a lot in
Absolutely.
Taxes. And it would appear that with what Donald Trump giveth with one hand, he taketh away with the other. You know, he's going to leave us with our mortgages and that interest deduction, but can you imagine not being allowed to deduct your state and local taxes?
It's a huge problem. And again, I think he's going to find a great deal of objection in places like New York, where he had a lot of support upstate from folks who are going to say, we rely on this. We rely on this. And frankly, it is a further transfer to, you know, say, another number of the southern and southeastern states that don't have much in the way of tax rates. But guess what? For every dollar they send to Washington in a place like Louisiana, you know what? They get back like $1.60.
Yeah.
Because we pay for FEMA, we pay for oil subsidies, which is part of what their booming business is down there, is oil subsidies that the rest of us pay for. So I think a much fairer, you know, part of the way we've squared that fairness between states is to allow deduction for state and local taxes. When we make a commitment in a state like Connecticut or a state like New York to say we want really good quality schools, we are going to try to fix our bridges when the federal government doesn't do its job. So again, I think that's the wrong direction to go, and especially at a time when we've got states that are taking a lot of federal dollars and then now we're going to get rewarded again. And that's just not fair. It's not right.
I want to ask you, we have a minute and 20 seconds, so it's a very short answer in terms of world peace. And that is, do you ever wake up in the morning and afraid that this particular president might get us into a nuclear war?
Yes. That's my short answer. My short answer is yes. I think he is volatile. I hope with advisors around him, we've had some briefings in the last week or two from General Mattis, from Secretary of State Tillerson, from his new head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Dumford. I'm reassured that I think they're serious, sober people who I hope will ask 2, 3, and 4 times if he talks about doing that. He definitely likes to talk in very disruptive ways to keep people off balance, but in the area of foreign relations and particularly around things like nuclear weapons, that is dangerous and disruptive in ways that are dangerous, I think, for the country, and certainly very undermining of our relationships with our allies. So I hope he learns to tone that down and understand he is the leader not just of this country, but of the free world, and he has an obligation to behave responsibly and to speak responsibly about grave issues like this.
Elizabeth Esty, always wonderful to have you with us, and we so appreciate your good thoughts and your good works, and we'll see you the next round. Thanks so much.
Sounds great. Great to be with you, Alan. Take care.